Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Welcome once again to another exciting episode of Zed Games, no doubt your favourite gaming radio show, as it is ours, because we're on it, and we should have it as our favourite. We are coming to you live from the 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane, and you might also be listening to us on the Community Radio Network, broadcasting us around Australia, which is very nice of them. I am Lee, and joining me in the studio tonight, Razor, there you are.
Hey, hey.
There he is. Ms. Candy Payne.
Hi.
And Jodie McGregor.
Hello.
So, what are we talking about on this episode, Ray?
Jodie has promised us a review of Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
Yes, I have been shooting and looting things on the moon.
And it's by far the most Australian entry into the series, right, Jodie?
Absolutely. It's one of the most Australian video games I've ever played.
Fantastic. Lee, you also have a review for us. I can't remember the title because it's, what, a random sequence of words?
Yeah, you're a real professional, Razor. Well done.
Cheers.
Yes, I have been playing the Dreamfall chapters, the long-awaited sequel to The Longest Journey. So we will discuss that later, no doubt.
Fantastic. But let's get this episode started, as usual, with the week in gaming news headlines, courtesy of Ms. Candy Payne.
Thank you, Razor. EA has announced the release date of two upcoming games. Battlefield Hardline, a cops and robbers twist on the Battlefield formula, will launch in March 2015. The title is being handled by Dead Space developer Visceral Games. Star Wars Battlefront, a first-person shooter being developed by Battlefield 4 studio DICE, is scheduled for release at the end of 2015. A representative for Telltale Games has confirmed that their Game of Thrones episodic adventure series will debut sometime this year. The series is expected to be released in 5 episodes, much like their previous titles The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us.
Fantastic. This has got to be like one of my most eagerly awaited games ever.
Yeah. They're kind of running out of time for this release, though, right? Like, we know nothing about it. The year is practically over already.
Yeah, but these guys, Telltale, that is, tend to spring these games up pretty quickly. I mean, we didn't get much of The Walking Dead Season 2 before it released, so... Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen screenshots, we haven't seen gameplay, but I'm pretty confident in these guys' abilities to deliver.
I hope that there's a playable Peter Dinklage at some point. Just in any game, actually. Put him in anything. Put him in Mario Kart. Put him in Mario Kart right now.
I'm banking on at least a cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But judging on how brutal the Walking Dead games were and how brutal the television series of Game of Thrones is, I'm imagining there's going to be a lot of blood, incest, and
bits.
Torture.
Bits.
It's only rated MA 15+ in Australia, so there will be swearing and violence, but
that'll
probably only mild impact themes, at least for the first episode.
So, like, a little bit of incest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
obviously.
But,
I feel
but
like
no
you can
drugs.
Have a little bit.
Yeah,
you're either
exactly.
incest or you're not. There's no borderline with that.
They found a way on the TV show.
Oh, God.
Let's just move on.
Video game streaming website Twitch has amended their code of conduct to prohibit broadcasters from wearing sexually suggestive clothing, including lingerie, swimsuits, and undergarments. Fully nude torsos from broadcasters of any gender are also banned under the new regulations.
Listeners, I just want you to know that Razor right now is wearing a very sexually provocative outfit, and he's not allowed to be.
Yeah. I was just thinking...
No, that's it?
I was just thinking I've got to find a new job now.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks.
Then that's the end of your Twitch channel. Mm.
What are you going to do with those pasties now? You don't need them anymore.
Oh. Do you want them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can put them on eBay.
Because you've still got your YouTube channel.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is where I'd like to move on. 6 classic LucasArts PC games, including Star Wars X-Wing and TIE Fighter, The Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition, and Sam & Max Hit the Road, are available digitally for the first time this week. The games are available to download from Good Old Games at GOG.com for between $6 and $10. The site says that more LucasArts classics will be available in the future.
I'm actually really excited about the... finally, a digital release of Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, which has been pretty much unavailable for years. And now we've finally got 3 good Indiana Jones stories available again. you know, discounting those two terrible films that we don't need to talk about.
I'm holding out for a digital re-release of Day of the Tentacle, one of my most beloved adventure games.
Well, they were working on that HD version of it for a while, and then that got spiked, so...
Yeah, that hurt.
You still feel the burn.
Apparently they were 80% completed on that by the time LucasArts got shut down.
Ah, single tear.
Yeah.
Rolling down my cheek.
Blizzard Entertainment has announced that Australian servers will launch this month for popular online role-playing game World of Warcraft. Players who are playing on designated Oceanic servers do not need to take any action, as their characters will be automatically migrated to the new servers. Expansion pack Warlords of Draenor is due for release on the 13th of November.
That's great. I can't wait to fax some of my old guild mates, and we'll all hop on our 56k modems and... 10 years is a bit too late for an Australian server, Blizzard. You know, like, unless this comes with time travel and you can let my much younger self know about it, I don't care anymore. Mm. Yeah, like, have they? Surely they've missed the boat, right? Does anyone still care enough in this country? Like, yes, there's a new one coming out. It still has a lot of customers, but... I mean, does anyone in Australia still play the Star Wars MMO? You there?
Not since they shut down the Oceania server.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, okay.
Before that I did, yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to work out well for everyone involved.
Haven't you ever heard the phrase, better late than never?
I don't think it applies in this case, no. Well, look, I wish them luck. Yes, good luck, Godspeed.
That's it for this week in gaming news headlines. You're listening to Zed Games on Triple Z, 102.1 FM. At the start of the show, we heard from a artist called 2NE1. And that was a K-pop group, right, Jody?
That's right, and that song was called I Am the Best.
Sweet. And this next one is from Andrew WK, and it's called Here Comes Char. That last piece of music we heard was from an artist called Andrew WK, the king of partying himself. That one was called Here Comes Sha. You're listening to Zed Games on Triple Z 102.1 FM or around the nation on the Community Radio Network. Now, my good friend Jody has been playing a game called Borderlands, the pre-sequel. And as its title suggests, it is somewhat of a intermediary game between the two Borderlands games, or am I getting something wrong?
No, that's right. It takes place between Borderlands and Borderlands 2. It's a spin-off that's been made not by Gearbox, who made the first two, but by 2K Australia. And it is very similar to those two games. It's a first-person shooter with a really wacky sci-fi setting and a whole bunch of randomly generated weird guns. So you're constantly picking up weapons that shoot lightning or set people on fire or shotguns that shoot grenades or weapons that explode when they run out of ammo. It's very willfully wacky and silly, which is good because... so many first-person shooters are so serious and stone-faced and dour. To have one that's just, like, about things blowing up and people making jokes is quite refreshing.
And the art style is quite cartoony as well to reflect that mood.
Yeah, that's right. It's got that cel-shaded look where everything has, like, thick black outlines around it. And so even though it's set in this sci-fi wasteland, it's quite colourful, which is a weird thing to say. It's like this post-apocalyptic world called Pandora, and in this game you go to its moon, and so that's just going from a brown place to a grey place. But the designs of the enemies and the weapons and all of the characters are so vivid, they all pop out of that sort of flatter background, and it has a really distinctive look to it that I appreciate. This one is quite similar to Borderlands 2 in the way that you play it. Like, if you played a lot of Borderlands 2, and I did, I played like over 100 hours of that damn game, this is like going to your couch and just sitting back down and sliding right into that spot that still has the imprint of your butt in it. The menus are all of the same. The movement and the weapons feel similar, although they've been tweaked and there are new things added. It is very much like slotting back into that groove.
So that's a wonderful mental image.
Thank you.
Yes. What has this game added then that, you know, makes the groove at least slightly texturally different? Is there some kind of anything at all? Help me.
Yeah, there are. There are a few things. Because you've gone from Pandora, which was this sort of American Wild West future wasteland, to like this frontier full of hillbillies and Jeds. The moon is a different kind of frontier. So instead of everybody being like Yankee hillbillies, everybody is Australian.
Makes sense.
Makes total sense. It's instead of like hillbilly space cowboys, there's Bogan space cowboys.
Makes sense.
It's just like a slight shift to the left in where all of the references and jokes come from. And it makes all the difference because being made by Australian developers and a lot of the voice actors being actual Australians means that it's the most authentic in its Australian references and its characters. There are a lot of side missions that really specifically reference things that are so Australian, I'm surprised they got through, because this must just be baffling as hell to the entire rest of the world. Americans are going to be so confused by this. There's an entire side quest that revolves around helping a dude named Don, who plays like a sci-fi version of cricket called Snicket. You have to help him find his ball. And while you're doing that, he's trying to explain the rules of the game to you, which he doesn't understand because it's one of those games that no one understands. And so, like, while you're running around shooting guys looking for this tiny cricket ball on the moon, there's a dude in your ear trying to explain what silly mid-off is.
You definitely made that up.
Silly mid-off is a real thing. I looked it up on the internet, and now I know what it means.
Yeah, no, I was, what
does
that
mean?
Was the joke.
It's a place on the cricket pitch.
I'm tired. Yes.
Silly is a shorter distance than short. I know that now.
Yeah.
The longest distance is deep, and then shorter than that is long, and shorter than that is short, and shorter than short is silly.
Yeah. Duh.
Cricket is such a dumb game.
Have you never measured anything in this country before?
Apparently not. Apparently not a mid or a mid off.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'm just going to measure everything in sillies from now. It's like seven sillies long.
Mm. Yeah, good.
Yep.
Excellent. I guess it helps, though, you're on an alien planet. You're on the moon of this alien planet. Even if it is inscrutable for people who aren't Australians,
oh, I'm sure they'll.
It will seem alien
to
them.
Yeah, they'll get something out of it.
Yeah.
I just don't really care what they get out of it, because what I get out of it is better.
Yeah, they'll be like, man, they've really constructed a weird and confusing fictional society here.
Yeah. These people care about some weird stuff.
Made up stuff and made up accents.
Uh-huh.
You know the story behind the Australiana that's present in it, right?
Yeah, I do. 2K Australia used themselves as placeholder voiceovers and sent the sort of alpha version off to Gearbox, and they said, haha, that's a hilarious idea. And 2K Australia said, yes, yes it is. And so they ran with it.
I'm so glad that happened.
Mm. Yeah, it makes all the difference to what would otherwise be just Borderlands 2 again.
Right, so if you do have to strip away all of the Australiana and all of the that character that makes the Borderlands games worth playing for some, what's left over for those of us who maybe do find Borderlands stuff a little bit shallow?
Not much. What's left over for you is, I guess, Destiny and all of the other video games about shooting things that are more serious and less goofy, and where you care more about the feel of the guns than the feel of the fictional universe you're shooting a gun in.
Yeah, okay. So it's still like,
I think there's a pretty sharp divide between people who are going to like a game like Borderlands, the pre-sequel, and people who are going to like games like Destiny, even though they're both about collecting weird guns in space while shooting people.
Yeah.
This is for the other audience.
Okay, right. Yes. So I kind of like Borderlands, but I get tired of the fact that there's only one guy that you shoot in it, and then people tell you jokes over the top of that while you're shooting that one guy as he walks out of a curtain and runs at you. Like, I find that really boring. And I like the jokes, and I like all the characters, and I like all the art style, but even if you give me 100 million guns to shoot that one guy as he comes out of the curtain, I'm still going to walk away very, very early into it. Tell me about space. Does that make it better?
Does make it different.
Okay.
The fact that it's on the moon, so a lot of the time you're in low gravity, does mean that you can do huge jumps. So That does shift things around tactically. You're not doing the cover shooter thing of ducking back behind something to reload and then running out to shoot and then ducking back to reload. Instead, you can leap up into the air and you have a jetpack powered by oxygen you can use to do a kind of a double jump and then a slam downwards, which causes like this shockwave of damage around you. So sometimes you shoot a bunch of guys and then run out of ammo and you start reloading and then you just leap up into the air and then butt slam down onto their heads. And then by the time you've done that, you've reloaded your gun and then you can shoot the next wave of them who comes towards you. And that's a very different thing to do than ducking behind a rock while you watch a reload animation play out.
That sounds really, really fun. Like, do you get to do that a lot?
Yeah, you do. You spend a fair amount of time on the moon. There's also indoor areas. You get to run around in a space station as well. But I think that's mostly there to add contrast to the slightly weirder moon physics. You also have oxygen to keep track of. You use the oxygen to power your jetpack, but you're also just plain breathing it. So you have to sometimes run between pockets of oxygen, and there are oxygen machines you can turn on in certain areas to refill your tanks. Depending on which character that you play, you can completely short-circuit that, though. I played the most with the robot character, Claptrap, who doesn't breathe.
Ah.
So that just meant I could butt-slam all day long and hardly ever worry about running out of oxygen. And when I did, it just meant I couldn't do the fancy double jump anymore and I didn't, you know, die of choking to death.
But, so that's another thing that this game series is known for, which is that it has multiple characters that you choose from the start and they all play very differently. And I understand Claptrap is particularly interesting in this, in that he kind of plays as everyone, right?
Well, his special abilities are randomized.
Right.
So the others will have one thing that they do. I also played as Athena, who has a shield that she can use to block stuff and then throw around like Captain America.
That's pretty cool.
That's one cool thing that she can do. But every time you hit that F button as Claptrap to trigger his special ability, a random thing happens, and sometimes they mirror abilities that characters from the like Borderlands 2 have, like the Gunzerker from the second game. There's a Funzerker thing that Claptrap has where he does the same thing of pulling out two guns and just shooting them endlessly, double wielding. But he also has other abilities, some of which are just dumb. There's a rubber duck that just lets you jump incredible heights. You can't stop jumping. You just bounce around up and down. And because you're rubber, you reflect bullets back. There's a gun wizard thing that lets you regenerate and
someone say the line.
Really fast.
Ray.
So the wizard came from the moon?
Yes. Yes, they did put a wizard on the moon.
I didn't want to say that joke, but Lee made me. You all heard it.
You jerk. Yeah, so his abilities are totally random.
We're legally required in the review to draw attention to the moon wizard reference. I think it's a very Borderlands thing.
Yes, yeah. It does make a lot of references to other games and other sci-fi things, as well as all of the Australian references. There are missions that make fun of Star Wars as well as Waltzing Matilda.
I saw a video of Boganella, the shotgun that screams Bogan things when you shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you acquire Boganella?
I did acquire Boganella, and I am very glad I did, because...
But we should probably leave that till after this track.
All right, yeah. Fine.
Boganella, the gun that screams Australian insults. That's coming up after this break.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Zed Games on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM. If you've just joined us, that was a delightful tune. Springfield theme song, I think called Springfield is Doomed by Dream Machine. Just before that, we were talking with Jody about his Borderlands pre-sequel. Jody.
Yeah, we were talking about Boganella, the talking shotgun, who is one of the better things about Borderlands, the pre-sequel, because this is a shotgun that's voiced by one of the actors from the show House O's, and she screams stuff every time you shoot the gun and every time you reload the gun and every time you put it away. Stuff like, get that up, yeah. I'm like, this is giving me a lady boner. It's really good.
Yeah.
There's a huge variety of it, and I did not get sick of shooting that gun. It was like my fallback second weapon for like about half the game. And in a game like Borderlands, where you're constantly getting new wacky guns, the fact that I stuck with Boganella just because I wanted to hear her like shouting, rack off your dag, every time I headshot some dude was amazing.
Roughly how many phrases are there? Like, did you eventually start to hear
them? Yeah, no, I did eventually hear them again. But then I just put it away for a while and used a slightly better gun and then ran out of ammo and I'd pull out Boganella again and then, like, get out of there. So that was pretty good.
Yeah. I was watching a video of Boganella and it almost sold me on it just off the strength of that because that was really funny.
Yeah, it's surprisingly not annoying.
Yeah.
It's actually really good. As is the mission where you meet Captain Chef. It's not a subtle game. Captain Chef is the English-accented colonizer who shows up on the moon and doesn't care that you live there and wants to plant the flag on it for King George.
Right.
So there's a whole mission where you have to help him get the flag up because he has to salute the entire time the flag is going up. That's the rule. So he needs someone else to raise it for him and then someone to protect him when bad guys show up and try to kill him. It's really weird and, again, so specific.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel conflicted about that one, actually.
It is a bit odd. Yeah. The thing is that all of that stuff is fun, and so is the butt slamming and the double jumping. But there were things about Borderlands 2 that I didn't like, and I was kind of hoping that this might fix some of them, and it doesn't. So all of the things that I didn't like about Borderlands 2 are still here, and some of them are actually kind of amplified by the way it's different. Like, I love in Borderlands that there's no fall damage. You can just jump off a cliff and shoot guys while you're falling and then land on the ground and keep going with, like, no ill effect. So you do that a lot, especially with the low gravity. You're just jumping around constantly. But then there'll be, like, lava that kills you instantly or those bottomless pits that you die when you fall in. And sometimes the ledges that you think you can land on aren't actually ledges you can land on. I died from falling more than I died from being shot. And that's also part of the problem there is that the vehicles were always kind of rubbish in the Borderlands games, like driving. They just don't handle very well.
They already had low gravity to deal with there.
Yeah, and the new vehicles in this are no better. Yeah. One of them actually has like a jump. It's this hover bike thing. And there's a part where you have to use the jump to get across like a river of lava to get to the new area where your new quests are. And I had to make that jump a lot of times. I died a lot just because they're really bad at doing vehicle handling. They haven't fixed it. They've just made it more annoying by putting in more places where you can die if you drive badly.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that was frustrating. And also because of the jumping, because you can double jump now, there are some jumping puzzles put in there.
Oh, no.
Like, they've used that mechanic to give you some first-person jumping puzzles, and I do not like jumping on very small platforms in a first-person game.
I don't think anyone does.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why'd they put that in?
I don't know, but it's in there.
You would have to have a sick mind to find that enjoyable, surely. Like, there is no pleasure to be derived from that.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
So those are the things that stopped me from loving it. Those are the kind of things that I overlooked in Borderlands 2, which I think I just overlooked because it was slightly better written. This is written okay, and it is quite funny, but it's the side missions that I liked, and the actual central storyline is quite bland, which I think is really just because it's set between two other games. It's just filling in the blanks.
Yeah,
there's no real surprises here. There's a few places where it tries to give you a twist, but it's actually quite predictable. If you were awake during Borderlands 2 and you paid attention to what was happening, then you are going to know everything that will happen in the main missions of this game.
Uh-huh.
So it sounds like for someone like Lee, who was like on the side of not liking the Borderlands series, this isn't going to really change his mind. But by the same token, if you like Borderlands 2, this is like more of the same.
Yeah, I played some of the DLC for Borderlands 2 because I liked it that much that when it finished, I wanted more. And that's what this really feels like. It feels like another expansion that just happens to be bigger, that has more new areas and lets you play as different characters this time rather than an entirely new game. So if you liked Borderlands 2 enough to keep playing through all that DLC, then this is for you. For people who didn't like Borderlands 2, then this will not change your mind.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Jody, for that review of Borderlands, the pre-sequel. Now, that is available on PC, which is the platform you played it for, but it's also available for the 360 and the PS3.
That's right.
But not for the Xbox One and the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Sucked in, you guys.
That's not very nicely.
Yeah, look, I was trying to think of the most Australian way to respond to that.
And yeah,
I,
no,
I
sucked in.
You could have said it with a Boganella accent.
Yeah. I'll give you that one. I was going to make you apologise, but...
No.
All right, fair enough. Let's head to a track now, and when we return, Lee, you will be reviewing a game. What was it called again?
Dreamfall Chapters.
Okay, I will remember that when we come back.
Good.
But this one is by Velociraptor, and it's a song called Robocop.
Lee, you have been playing an adventure game called Dreamfall Chapters, which is a sequel to The Longest Journey. How long was The Longest Journey? How long was it between journeys? It's a while, right?
Yeah, yes, that is correct. So The Longest Journey, the first one came out in 99, and then they had another one in 2006. And the one in 2006 ended on a cliffhanger, and they were like, wait for the sequel. But it was Funcom, who were in some financial difficulty at the time and were working on two different MMOs, and so that never really came out, which is a bit of a shame. So yes, it has been a long journey. I forgot most of the events of the middle game, which may have
Eight years ago.
it may have hamstrung me during my playthrough. So this game, this was kickstarted by the writer Ragnar Tornquist, who got the license from the company that he's in anyway and made it with a smaller company. And it's the first chapter has come out now. So it's an adventure game, but it's kind of... It's one of the adventure games that's been inspired by the recent Telltale games, by, in a way, some of the David Gage stuff, more Fahrenheit than Heavy Rain and those other games.
Beyond.
So it's a third-person affair where you are walking around in a place, interacting and talking to people and picking up items and trying to solve very vague puzzles, either through socializing or giving people stuff. But what makes it work is that it is a really well-crafted, well-written adventure. The Longest Journey, the original one, and this one continues this tradition of being about it's about two different worlds that kind of mirror one another. So you play as a young girl in this one called Zoe, who at the end of the last game is in a coma, having kind of solved the puzzle and ending up in a coma, and you're like, oh, can't wait to find out what happens next. So you wake up, you're in a dream world, and you have to get out of this like dream state in order to regain your life again. So these games are all about this dreary kind of like cyberpunk futuristic world where you have a very mundane, ordinary existence, and they do a really good job of making it feel like, even though this is the future where there are like spaceships hovering over and, you know, holograms everywhere and robots doing stuff, it still feels like this is the most like boring, ordinary future we could possibly get. Like, bits of it are cool. Like, you're in really cool cities. You're in a city called Eurotopia in this one, and it's like perpetually dark there. There's no sun, and there's like little back alleys where there's lots of like subcultures interacting and stuff. It feels it's a little bit Melbourne, actually, or maybe it's a bit more Brisbane, because there's this like oppressive armed security force called I that are pushing people around. So for me, it felt like home already. So that's one side of it. You've got this cyberpunk world, and then you're a character that can pierce through the veil and end up in the magical world of Arcadia, where there are talking animals and wizards and all kinds of things. And so it's about this idea of stories being able to take on a life of their own and drive people forward. It's very meta, but at the same time it grounds everything in a strong reality, and all of the characters that you encounter are crafted in a way where when you get up to them, everyone you meet is in the middle of something. Like, they've got their own thing that's going on, and you're like way down on their list of priorities, and so everyone feels very, very real. But it's kind of it's a double-edged sword, because the game also doesn't do anything in a way where it might introduce this to you slowly, so that if you're not entirely into it, it's, you're just going to bounce right off it, you know, because everyone you meet is just like, oh, they're, you've got this vertical slice of a character, and if you're not invested in what they're into, then you are not going to care about this guy who doesn't even care about you, right?
Yeah.
So, it's something where you really have to be open to accept the game as it is and this storytelling technique, because if you do let it just wash over you and get, you know, just absorb all of this stuff, you do find a very rich and real feeling world, because it does seem like everyone has so much going on. So this is the first chapter of this sequence that is going to be released over the course of the next several months, much like the Telltale games. And it does that same thing that the Telltale adventure games do, where you will often be given a choice and you feel like this is a very important choice and it's going to have consequences. And the game will tell you that this is an important choice. There will be consequences. People will remember this. But you never really get a sense that you often don't feel like the choices that you've made have meant anything at all. And the ones that it tells you are important, you never see how they play out in this opening chapter. So it's hard for me to really gauge how well this works off this first piece that they've released.
Mm. Because you might see the consequences in later episodes.
Yeah, and that's really cool theoretically, and we've seen that that works in other games. But I think with the Telltale ones, you also tend to see, you get a sense that there's an immediate consequence, or there is at least a payoff by the end of the chapter that you're playing. But with this, it's like at the very end, it tabulates all the choices that you made, and one of them is literally you get to choose. Your boyfriend asks you to pick up some lunch for him as you're like on your way to visit him, and you go to a street vendor who is offering either cheese soup, which is boring, or these like fresh pork sausages, which were like sourced from a weird place because it's a cyber future, and so everything is
cheese soup.
Yeah, right.
Take the cheese soup.
Yeah. I'll go for cheese soup.
You're going for the cheese soup.
Yeah,
but the description that you get from Nella, who is this awesome, like weird pseudo Euro combination, like this super angry European woman who runs Nella Bites, which is the like little stall that she has, really sells these pork sausages as being fantastic. And she does a good job. I was like, man, I'm going to get these pork sausages.
Is your boyfriend a vegetarian?
No.
Probably irrelevant,
not.
Sorry.
Yeah, but you know, like, you know that he has kind of, he tends to make very uninteresting food choices. He is not ambitious when it comes to his palate, but you, Zoe, are. And so when you're, one of the cool things that the game does when you're given a choice is that you hover over each one and you get this little insight from Zoe where she talks about what each choice means to her. So you never really feel like I'm making this decision here is just the worst possible one, because she can justify each point that you make, even if you personally think that one is better than the other. So she was like, yeah, you know, Reza will just, you know, he'll be happy with the cheese soup. That's what he gets all the time. But maybe he needs to be a bit more adventurous. You know, we're in Eurotopia anyway. Maybe he should branch out and eat the pork. I have gone on about sausages for 3 minutes, but that's one of the decisions that the game tells me is going to have huge ramifications.
Well, not unless he's allergic to dairy, is it really going to have huge ramifications?
Well, I know that he didn't have an immediate reaction because I at least experienced a day and he didn't go, whoa, that pork just went straight through me.
It could be like a gas thing. Like,
yeah.
Like later that night, you know, the consequences become clear in bed. You know what I mean?
Maybe therefore more ramifications for her. That's
perhaps. Perhaps. None of that occurred, certainly.
Are your choices timed? You know, like, are you feeling the pressure to pick one and then
No, your choices are never timed, actually. Time slows down when you're making these choices. So It's actually a cool effect. Like, everything starts to move slowly and the, you know, sound gets all distorted. It's a very cool way of making you feel like you actually do have to make a choice under a time limit.
Like Gwyneth Paltrow in Sliding Doors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just like that. Just like your favorite movie, Ray.
Yes, thanks.
Exactly.
Okay, we're talking about Dreamfall Chapters, which Leah's been playing. Now, we're just going to take a quick musical break and keep talking about it when we return. You're listening to Zed Games on Triple Z.
Lee, you've been telling us about the Dreamfall Chapters, the first episode of that.
Yeah.
You've told us quite a lot about pork sausages and cheese soup.
Mostly, yes.
Were the other decisions in the game that you had to make, the other big decisions, much more dramatic?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about them
is that... Well, yeah, he went to a pet shop and had to choose between a puppy or a kitten.
It's very important.
Sorry.
The interesting thing about this first chapter is that it is primarily... It's a single day in the life of this character, Zoe. It's set several months after she's woken up from this coma. So you start off in this magical dream, this kind of in-between place, and then you're just experiencing a single day of her life in the cyberpunk world. And right before you wake yourself up from this coma, you get into a fight with your old, the old version of you, the pre-karma personality. Mm. And that's where you make a choice, which I didn't realize was setting up what the next rest of the game was going to be like. Where you basically choose what kind of life and person you're going to wake up as.
Yeah.
And so I made one decision, and that was to basically start afresh, because I thought that the person, the other personality was kind of a mean bitch. Ooh. And I just was like not really wanting to be that person anymore, which sets you off a different path. So you've got a different job, you volunteer for a socially progressive political party, you have all these little things that you have to do in the course of your day just to establish the setting. Mm. And so, yeah, you do have a decision which charts the course of your life. I've not checked out what happens if you pick one of the other options, but apparently you've got a completely different middle section. You have a different job. You have different characters that you interact with, which is really, really cool. But you have no idea that that is the case unless you're me and you're like looking up information about the game that you just played on the internet, because it never says, oh, by the way, this is significant, you could play through this. And I like that that's subtle. I think that's really cool that it actually does that. But also, if you're going to have content that branches that significantly, you should signpost that. People should know. We were talking about in Beyond Two Souls, Ray, which you played through.
Yes.
And we, weeks later, discovered that the game actually branched off and deviated a great deal more than it ever explained that it was. And it was only much, much after the fact that people started talking about their own interactions and discovered that this game was quite, quite broad and different. And this is the same thing, where it's responding to decisions that don't seem important with like huge changes, and then the ones that it does signpost are things like cheese sausages.
So is that a little bit of a red herring then, do you think?
Maybe. Like, it might be just a fun thing that they want to throw in there, and that over the course of this game, like, I don't... Like, sausages are irrelevant. What is interesting about this first chapter is that it does this great slice of life first little day really, really well, but it ends so abruptly that you... For one thing, you don't even get to see the mirror world at all. You don't really get to experience what makes this setting really, really cool, is that you go from dull cyberpunk. And then I say dull in that that's what they want you to, to feel, even though it's actually, like, really cool, right? Mm. Lasers, hooray! To then experiencing, like, this weird wonderland of a magical world. But you don't see that at all, because obviously they want to portion this game up appropriately. So it makes it hard for me to really say, run out, this is perfect, this is, you know, if you're a fan of The Longest Journey, the original one, you know, they've done it again. They've kind of done a bit of it again, and I hope that they keep that up.
Mm.
But I'm not really sure how well they're going to adhere to this formula that they've set up, and I don't know how balanced the story is going to be. And it almost feels like there's not quite enough stuff to do to justify even multiple playthroughs, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it is, like, the puzzles are kind of clever, but they're not complex in any way. They're mostly just about the annoyance of having to go from one place to another. Like, that's really what an adventure game often comes down to, is how much walking back and forth you can tolerate. And if you can handle that, then you've won the adventure game. And this, you know, this does some cool stuff where you're, you know, you feel pretty good about solving a couple of the puzzles that are in there, but they are also, like, you don't really have any way to creatively take control of that. You know, you're just clicking the buttons through until the story that they want to tell you happens. The story that you get, though, seems really interesting. I hope it pays out well, but at the very least, it's really sharply written. It's really, really well voiced. Your main character in particular is just, she sounds great. She's got this kind of British accent. She just sounds like a real person, which is, considering the length of time that you will have to spend with this person, you know, that's really important that they actually seem like a real character. As a fan of the series, I'm intrigued by what they've done here. I'm looking forward to the next episode. Yeah. I've no idea when that's coming out, which is also kind of annoying.
Let's hope not 8 years.
At the very least, I would get it free as a downloadable component. Mm. Like, you buy this once and each chapter will come out at a set time. It's fascinating. It's a very interesting world that you encounter. There's not quite enough of it there for me to recommend people who aren't already kind of interested should check this out. Yep. But perhaps once there's a bit more momentum, I might revisit it.
Find out if that cheese soup or the sausages actually had any impact.
That's right. Exactly. I think that's how we should end this.
So, Lee, you've just been talking about Dreamfall Chapters, which is a PC-only game, and it's available now. It's an episodic game.
Yes.
As you said, you buy it now, and the chapters get automatically downloaded when they come out.
That's right.
Cool. All right, that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Zed Games, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Now, next week, we have a very special episode. We're going down to Melbourne this weekend for PAX Australia. It's one of the hugest gaming conventions in the country, and we've got a whole bunch of exciting interviews lined up, and we'll be bringing you them next week.
Hooray for us!
Yes. So hopefully you will enjoy that as much as we enjoy getting that stuff. All right. Did that sentence make sense at all?
Yes.
Yeah, it did.
Oh,
okay.
Good. All right.
Bye, everybody.
Right. We'll catch you guys next week. We're going to leave you now with one last track from the Borderlands 2 soundtrack. I thought that was appropriate. And this one's called Shortchange Hero by The Heavy.